This episode is brought to you by our friends at HostPapa.com. HostPapa's powerful web hosting solutions and cloud-based productivity tools are perfect for small business owners, digital entrepreneurs, and freelancers. Go to HostPapa.com/FilmSack today and use our exclusive promo code FilmSack. Get 15% off their popular shared web hosting packages. That's HostPapa.com/FilmSack and the code FilmSack.
Okay.
Let's do it.
When the boy was born, like old Spartans, he was inspected. If he'd been small or puny, or sickly or misshapen, he would have been discarded. From the time he could stand, he was baptized in the fire of combat.
Hello.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to FilmSack, episode 300. That's right, episode 300. I'm Scott Johnson. We're mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. And joining me today on this epic occasion, Brian, this is blasphemy. This is madness. This is Dunaway.
Oh, greetings and welcome to the Smithsonian Hall of Holes. Please watch your step. To the right, we have the Sarlacc Pit from Star Wars universe, and if you listen carefully, you can still hear Boba Fett being digested for 1,000 parsecs. Is that time or distance? Who knows? Moving on. If you look to your left, you will see a bunch of holes in the movie holes. We had Shia LaBeouf come in and dig each and every one of these. He bitched and complained the whole time and took a bunch of selfies and did some avant-garde crap, but they're just the same LaBeouf holes. May he rest in peace. And finally, the gaping pit from the movie 300, filled with Persian messengers and probably a few Spartan children, need a rail around that thing. Now, if you will please put on your AR glasses, we'll begin the interactive portion of our tour where you will play the role of the Persian messenger and I play the role of Leonidas. Ready? Here we go. Okay. This is Sparta. This is Sparta. Ooh, you're a big one. Oh, and this is Sparta. Thank you for participating in the Thank you for participating in the Smithsonian Hall of Holes. And remember, please watch your step.
Oh, my gosh. One of the best intros ever. You saved some of your best work for 300, dude.
300, man. You got to ratchet up your game.
Yeah.
I spent at least 10 minutes on this greeting.
It's really good.
10 whole minutes?
Can we watch Holes together sometime?
Yeah.
Oh,
hole,
my God.
Holes should
be awesome.
Be done. Absolutely. We need
let's not watch the porn parody of Holes.
No, right. Let's not.
Holes.
Yeah, let's not.
Harry Holes.
I guarantee that exists.
I would be interested to hear later on if you guys remember any other movies with famous holes in it.
Yeah, there might be some. I'll bet you there are. Let's find out as we go even deeper with Randy. Just look at those abs, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian, congratulations, my friends. We made it. We reached our glorious 300th episode, and we're finally sacking an animated film in true film sack style. We've managed to find a movie made up of only the tiredest of tropes, in which the Greeks are played by a Scot, an Aussie, and a couple of Englishmen, and the huge Persian villain is played by a tiny Brazilian. To celebrate for you three wonderful people that I'm proud to call my friends for the last decade of podcasts and fun, I went and got a tiny Brazilian just for you.
Oh, how much is a Brazilian? They're very nice. Also with us, Brian Men in Tights Ibbot.
So some of you may recognize me, but for those of you who don't, my name is Xerxes. And listen, quite frankly, I'm a god king. I'm running for ruler of Thermopylae, and I've been seeing what Leonidas is doing in this area, and I think it's just disgraceful. You know what we call him around here? We call him Loser Leonidas. Loser Leonidas. Let me introduce you to my running mate. He's great. He's really great. He's a hunchback, but he's really smart. I find the smartest people. I'm giving him wenches. Can you believe that? I have the best wenches. I have great wenches. So you're sick of these Spartans crossing into our borders and taking our jobs. I'm sick of it too, believe me. So here's what I'm going to do. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take some spears. I'm going to take some bodies, and I'm going to build a tree.
How so stupid are the people of the country?
All right.
That was amazing. Thank you.
That was really good.
When you look back, that'll be Donald Trump for reference, 2016 presidential election.
Right. Oh, right. Yes.
Whether or not we live or die.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, one way or the other, whoever unearths this, whatever social excavation they do, just know what Brian's talking about.
It's weird. You don't tend to think that the losers end up being like a historical figment, right? Like we might have, for instance, impersonated Al Gore,
Walter
15 years ago, but now no one. I have no idea what he even sounds like anymore. You know what I mean?
We only have a few things like man, bear, pig, and freaking.
I invented the internet.
And the internet thing sort of remains. And then once in a while he'll get up and go an inconvenient truth, and people will remember that.
Which is coming to Netflix this next month.
Oh, is it?
Anyway, we should watch that.
We should see how inconvenient it is to watch that.
It's just wishful thinking that 15 years from now I will have not thought of Donald Trump in years.
I don't know. He may leave a stain that's hard to forget. I'm just saying. It may be hard to ignore.
On the White House pillows, there will be a large Trump-shaped stain.
Yeah, orange stain on the sheets. Anyway, it is truly blasphemy and madness. This is Sparta. This is episode 300, and it's about 300. Why not? Of course we did 300 as the movie. I mean, come on, duh. What were you thinking, people at home? Did you think we were going to do
2012?
Yeah, 2012 or 21 grams or 13 or what other number are there? We should do this for every movie.
That would have been good.
Now that I think about it, anything that has a number in it that matches with a number of episodes, that's the movie we should watch.
Because right. We're clever.
Yeah, we're clever.
We worked hard.
I don't know. It seems all right. Like I think we're out of them, though. What else is there? The 4,400?
500 Days of Summer we'll watch in 200 episodes.
Okay, there you go.
I was hoping there was a movie called 3,000 so we could do a pretend future episode. There's a 3,000 and...
We'd have to start recording.
We're really old now.
We'd have to start recording hourly to get there quick enough before we die, I think. But anyway, the movie is 300. It is the epic story of mostly blue screen King Leonidas of Sparta and a force of 300 men, or was it 299? I don't know, to fight the Persians at Thermopylae in 480 BC. It is based on a comic book. Yeah, no one's ever really asked the hard question,
is he 300th or is he 301?
Right, exactly. I don't know.
300. In a conflict pitting the ancient Greeks against the Persians in 480 BC, Spartan King Leonidas leads his small band of 300 soldiers against an army of more than 1 million during the Battle of Thermopylae.
And, you know, we have to talk about this story only. Mm. And in this story only, I think he is one of the 300. Okay. I think he has 299 other people.
Because he keeps saying... me and 300 of the best Spartans or whatever. There's a lot of references like that. Well, so it's on the surface, you'd go, oh, well, you're 301 then, buddy. But I think he's speaking as one of the 300 or else the name of the movie's wrong.
He takes some liberty with that because even near the end, after they've lost some Spartans, he says, and with the 300 behind him, I'm like, no, there should be I've already counted 1, 2, 3. There's at least 20 dead.
Yeah, you've lost a few. I guess they're behind you still. So maybe that's the deal. Right. They're still laying back there their head off. And besides, the name of a movie is bad if it's it's called 301. That's the name of our movie. It's a terrible name. Anyway, 300, Zack Snyder. I'm going to say it up early so I don't have to say it again later or have to explain myself. I love this movie and you can't convince me otherwise today. I love 300. I know it's cheesy. I know it's over the top. I know that it's ridiculous. I don't care. It's a great film and something that Zack Snyder should have rolled with. He should not be the guy you hire to do Superman. He should be the guy you hire to do other weird shit like this.
Mm-hmm.
And
right. You mean like Aquaman? He's a producer on that.
He's a producer on all the WB stuff.
All the DC stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, right. Pretty much.
But he's actually filming Justice League. So if you didn't get enough of Batman versus the Superman, then
The footage from Comic-Con looked okay. I'm not gonna make a judgment because so did some of the BVB or BBS stuff looked all right. But this stuff looked pretty good. Whatever. He's got a talent for all kinds of things. I just don't think he's being best used right now, or he's not in the right place, or whatever. Watchmen was, I think, the last good thing he did. Some people would argue with me on that. But I think 300 is not just a fine adaptation of the Frank Miller graphic novel, but a hell of a film and super interesting. even today, there are some 2006 standards that haven't held up so much, you know, visually, I think. But if you...
In general, not Zack Snyder's.
No, not really his fault. Like, a lot of this stuff is pushing real boundaries. But, like, the fake blood is pretty weird looking now. And a lot of things do this better with the fake blood now. You see this technique.
We were 2 years away from going full-on 3D? Mm-hmm. So, you know, where everything became 3D this, 3D that. And this was right on the cusp of that. And they were supposed to go back and redo this one in 3D. But I don't know how you could, because there's so much grain in this filming process.
There's so many layers to it, though. And especially when you watch the end and the end credits and the way they do the visuals there, which are really, really cool. Mm-hmm. Right. All of a sudden you think, oh, this could be so cool in 3D, because there's so much green screen work that you know that they've got all these things in separate layers and all these things, you know.
So many spears in your face.
Totally.
Like, you know what? I think you misspelled, or your brain auto-corrected would look really cool in 3D. I think what you meant was 3D is garbage and nobody wants it.
Well, there's the Pixar 3D and then there's the Clash of the Titans 3D.
I think every animated film should be 3D, because it's like simple. It's just so easy. So if you want 3D in the animated world, do it. What's it going to cost
you? Well, this one was so digital and so digitally shot and digitally post-produced and everything else. You'd think that this is just about as close as you'd get to a movie that would be easy to retrofit. But they haven't done it. So anyway,
can I give you the most successful films of 2006?
Please,
yes, please.
Okay, so this is not the art house.
Can I guess it? Just one.
Sure.
Hold on. Let's see. 2006. I'm just trying to get my head straight. Oh no, that was Batman.
I'm just trying to Google.
We can go ahead and round off the Da Vinci Code, which we just sacked. That was 2006.
Right. Yeah.
Oh really? Same year as this? Wow.
Yes. Yeah. Same year as this.
Weird.
Any other guesses?
I was gonna say Batman Begins, but that was a year before. So never mind. Mm-hmm. I take it back. And Star Wars.
I am a generous God. I will give you Superman Returns.
Oh, you're a kind God. Okay.
Yes.
Superman Returns probably made a bunch of money that year.
It did, and it was a good movie. Like, all things considered, Brandon Routh makes a fine Superman.
Sure.
And Bryan Singer directed a good film. Like, it wasn't
Kevin Spacey is
It just
Lex.
Just didn't have a truly compelling story or a reason to make another one with him.
Yeah, that's true. I'll give you that. The plane thing was cool. I like that bit. Where he captured the plane and dropped it down. And
2006, most successful films of 2006.
All right, I've run out of, I can't think of any more.
Right, I'm not, 2006 was a suck year.
Was Iron Man 2 in there?
Nope, Iron Man 1 wasn't even until 2008.
Oh, really? Yeah. Wow, for some reason I thought those were a lot earlier. Okay. Yeah.
I want to say...
We're not going to let Randy ever tell us, are we?
You know,
so I'm thinking maybe the Fantastic Four 2 was good back in 2006.
And, that was 07.
Silver Surfer.
Silver Surfer was 07. So tell us, what do we got? I'm dying to know now.
Well, for starters, you talked about films that don't hold up, like maybe they don't look as good as you thought they did.
Yeah.
Pan's Labyrinth was 2006.
I think that's
a questionable one.
You got to be kidding me. That movie's amazing. That movie holds up.
I'm talking about the visuals.
But it transcends. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think the visuals on that will never look dated, because it is out of the realm. It's a fantasy realm. Like, look at this stuff and say, oh, that dude's got finger eyes in his hands.
Well, even more so, that stuff's all, most of that is practical and with some digital help. Like, the eyes are digitally masked on the hands, but that dude's in a suit. Like, he's not a CGI man. So I think I completely agree.
CGI man.
I mean, I haven't seen it in a while, so I shouldn't say that unless I've seen it. But I feel like that movie should hold up better, because there's a lot of practical going on.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of special effects, 2006 was the year of both The Prestige and The Illusionist.
Oh, wow. That's right.
The twin movies.
Yeah. Yep. The Armageddon and Deep Impact of 2006.
Of magic. Yep. Yeah.
That's exactly right. Of like 100-year-old magic, right? Yeah. They're both kind of old.
You know, and back then, I thought I was so clever back then when I would say things like, oh, did you guys see the Batman versus Wolverine movie? It even has freaking Alfred in it. Like, that's a funny thing. Today it happens constantly where there's crossover.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're saying your comedy doesn't hold up.
Well, no.
So many A-list stars that have been superheroes or been in superhero films that now a third of the movies that come out in a year are going to be like, oh, okay, well, that one's got Lois Lane dating the Riddler.
Exactly. Or and even this one, I can look back now and go, oh, and now Black Widow's in it, because she was in it, but she wasn't Black Widow yet. But now she's Black Widow, so she was in The Prestige. Right. Like, it's just so dumb now. But at the time, man, I thought I was being clever with that.
Mm-hmm. You were clever.
David Bowie was a Nikola Tesla in that, I would like to remind everyone.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Great movie. Why have you stolen my...
2006, 300 was not the only film in 2006 that's drastically color washed. Mm. 2006 may have been the peak for color washing that included films like The Fountain, the Michael Mann Miami Vice.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And I had another example.
Wait a minute. Brian just went, ooh, never saw it.
Never saw it.
And 2006 also included Children of Men. That's my other example. Oh, Children of Men.
Yeah.
Does that hold up?
Have
you seen it recently?
It's very much like this, I think. My memory of it is it's very blue screen everything, color wash, like Randy says, kind of Xbox 360 era effects. And I don't know, there was something very specific about that kind of movie. It's a bit like, you know what it's like? It's like the other Miller thing, Sin City.
Sin City.
Yeah. Very much like that.
Yeah.
So you might be forgiven
for
thinking
3D too.
You might be forgiven for thinking 2006 was a strange looking year for films, but it also included some really bright and colorful comedies. That includes Borat, Little Miss Sunshine, Talladega Nights, Cars, the Pixar film Cars. Yeah. And 2006 was also the year of Idiocracy, Mike Judge's future comedy.
Those are all very colorful movies. You're right about that. Also, it doesn't feel like Borat should be that old. Like, of all those you named, I'm like, oh, yeah, those all sound like 06.
You know,
Borat does not sound that old.
I went through a phase where I really hated everything Borat, and it was from the time Borat came out and all the way to, I think Alice Through the Looking Glass, which was not a very good movie, but Borat is really good in that. I was
Sasha Baron Cohen.
Oh, was he in that? Yeah. I didn't know he was in that.
Yeah.
What does he play?
He's the timekeeper.
Okay.
Yeah, and he was really.
He's trying to become a serious actor, if eccentric, an eccentric serious actor.
Well, he was also in. So he was in, obviously Borat, but then he was in Talladega Nights. He was the posing French racer guy man.
Yeah.
Which seems like, that feels like way separate to me, because at the time I was thinking, oh, this Borat thing's all about people don't know who he is, so he's getting away with this crazy stuff in real life, and they're filming it as if it's a movie, but these are real people reacting to this guy they think is Borat. But then Talladega Nights, he's an actor, and in my eyes, those movies were like years apart. And it was, now can I do regular movies because people know who I am. I'm no longer Ali G and Borat because they figured my trick out. So now I'm just going to be an actor. But the fact that those happened in the same year, that surprises me. I don't remember that at all.
The lest you think that 2006 was a generally crappy year, let me name some great films that also did well at the box office. Letters from Iwo Jima that year. The Departed, the Denzel Washington movie Inside Man,
Which is great. That's a recommendal.
I'm Inside Man. I never go outside and I'm playing video games.
You've always been a good Inside Man. I agree. Yeah.
And I'll wrap up this topic with the great, great 2006 film that was Snakes on a Plane.
Oh, was that 2006? Oh, really?
See, that feels like yesterday. That stupid viral bullshit movie. Uh-huh. By the way, Inside Man, everyone always forgets Spike Lee directed it, is not what you expect from a Spike Lee movie, and also I think it's my favorite Spike Lee movie.
For sure, mine too.
Now that is my white guy opinion. Okay.
You ready for me to bring it back?
Yeah, bring it back to 300. Okay. Right. Bring it back.
Remember big bald fat guy in Borat, his producer or manager or whatever he is, named Ken Davitan or Davidian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
He played Xerxes in the comedy Meet the Spartans, which came out in 2008, which was a play on 300. Hey, how about that 300?
Hey, 300.
I almost watched that Meet the Spartans crap. Almost watched it.
I never
last
star
night
on Metacritic.
It came up afterwards. It was like,
did it really? Was that like I the did. Netflix or something recommendable?
Of course, this wasn't on Netflix. We didn't get an opportunity to do that, but I got this on Vudu for $4 in the HDX format, which is 1080. And so that was one of the other ones. Meet the Spartans was in that list of you might want to watch this as well. Where'd you guys watch it?
I watched it on Amazon streaming is where I got it.
Right.
I
have 1080.
Yeah, Brian has
DVD. 480.
I know. But it's widescreen at least.
Yeah, it's widescreen, right. 480, you know, whatever.
This week I bought it on iTunes. I rented it on iTunes. I originally saw it when it was in theaters. I saw it in, I remember, the IMAX screen that I went to see it at in Round Rock, Texas. Mm. I also went to the movies to watch Meet the Spartans. I'm embarrassed to say I remember it opened at the end of January 2008. Mm. I remember going to see Meet the Spartans.
Took them two whole years to get that stuff right.
Did not last the whole film. That it suffers the curse of Kevin Sorbo.
Isn't it a little weird that they didn't make a sequel to this? Well, they did make one.
They did, 300 Rise of an Empire.
Yeah, but they didn't make it until 2014, which is weird. Right, that's weird. Right. It seems like your opportunity hole closed, you know.
Opportunity hole.
Your opportunity hole is closing up there, buddy.
It just feels like that took too long to do, but whatever.
Right. According to justwatch.com, Meet the Spartans is available to watch for free right now on HBO Now. So
if you can't watch 300, at least go watch Meet the Spartans.
Don't do it.
That's not free.
I have a better idea. Why not watch the 300, the porn parody? Okay, here's a good transition for us because I found a website that these guys said, hey, hold it for the show. So I held it for the show. These are the top. I found a list of basically the top porn parodies of all time. And I have to share them because the names alone are just precious.
I think that's all. I think that's the only criteria. You're the top 10 porn parody names. Yeah.
What I'm saying. I have no idea.
So we're not talking about quality of porn movie. We're talking about quality of porn game.
No, I don't. Right? I don't own any of this. I've never seen any of this. I'm literally seeing these names for the first time. So here's one here called Kara Loft Womb Raider.
Yes, gotta have that. I mean, I think we all went there immediately after two.
It just needs to be called Womb Raider. Why? You got to skip that first part.
Well, it's because they were trying to match it up with
the joke.
Angelina Jolie.
I don't think I want the word womb in my porn.
What's wrong with the word womb?
That's too deep.
Yeah,
you've gone too far.
I was thinking figuratively, but yes, I guess literally too. Yes, yeah. Right.
I really like the word womb.
That's
it's
like saying,
fun.
It's like, hey, baby, check out my urethra or my, you know, like it's like my kidneys.
Well, it's also, implies pregnancy. You don't think of a womb until you think of pregnancy.
Yeah, good point.
Okay, I guess I just think of a womb all the time.
All right, here's your next one. Buffy.
Womb with a view.
Buffy the Vampire Lair. There's that one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's smart. Sure. That's smart.
They did is take off one letter. That's brilliant.
Oh, you'll like this one then, because they added a letter to Pulp Friction.
I wonder if they got a $5 milkshake in that.
Yeah.
Should be Pump Friction.
Jersey Score. There's one based on a television thing.
Here's, I think in the top 10.
Here's one. Why even make this? The Human Sextapede.
I don't understand.
Wait, I don't either.
I want to know how that movie goes. So yeah, because I mean, the centipede is butt to mouth sewing. What
I don't think you even need to go any further.
Yeah, that's probably all you have to say. Here's a good one. The Da Vinci. There's two of these. First and a sequel. The Da Vinci Load 1 and 2. So there's that. And then my favorite, without any change to the name.
Hold on. I have to guess.
Okay, guess.
My clues, is it a TV show?
It's a TV show.
Okay. Is it a comedy?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Seinfeld.
No, but that exists, by the way.
That would have been like side-filled or something like that.
Side, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Side-fold.
Since you said the name wasn't changed, to guess The Big Bang Theory.
You are absolutely correct. That is absolutely correct. Big Bang Theory is the correct answer, yeah.
Oh, that's actually disappointing.
It's kind of dumb. Kind of is. Yeah,
you were hoping. Disappointing is that they didn't go the Da Vinci Chode.
That would have been good, except again, like the womb, a little off-putting.
Okay, yeah.
I'm trying to figure this thing out. What is this? Some kind of
wait? I saved two more. Penis? I didn't see these. Missionary Position Impossible.
I like to know the stories behind these. Though.
And finally. Based on the animated hit series on Fox, Bob's Boners. All right, excellent. Yes. Well done. Well done, web internet. Bob's
What's boner. Great is you got to figure there's somebody who's hired after. So they come up with a name first. That's the first thing they do. They see what's popular, say, okay, we're going to make a thing parody called this.
Yeah.
And then they give it to some poor dude who's got to write a very loose story around a bunch of sex scenes.
Yeah, that's
using
probably
that
right.
title.
It's quite a job. Someone has to do it. A dirty
it
job,
is a
really.
A lot of fun to sit around and come up with the porn name for a movie.
Yeah.
Like 300 just doesn't lend itself at all to this.
No, I agree. And the 300 isn't enough of a change to it. And also, it's just what you think it is, everyone. It's 300 guys and one lady.
Right.
It's dumb. Don't. I mean, that's it's according easy. To what the internet
that's
just
picking
told me.
That's picking the low fruit, man. Come on.
Yeah, quit picking that low fruit. Speaking of a good porn parody, low fruit. All right, next up. So Zack Snyder directed this, wrote the screenplay along with Kurt Johnstad. And this has your Gerard Butler, your Lena Headey, your David
Michael
Wenham,
Fassbender.
Michael Fassbender, who I forgot entirely was in this until someone brought it up the last week, and I went, "What?"
Yeah, he ends up being like the main thing that keeps Leonidas going.
And and he's I mean, I don't know. There's good acting all around, and also the tone of the material is pretty over the top. So, you know, say what you want about it, but everyone's good. I think he's really good in it. Like he's actually. Like when he's hurt and got arrows sticking out of him and he's all my king or whatever, I'm buying it. Like he looks like he is in pain. Totally. And here's the big question for me. And this went through my head over and over during the watching of this.
Okay.
When was it that we first thought, he's going to be Fassbender's going to be a huge deal. I don't know when it was because
after this,
I don't know that this movie.
Yeah, I think it was directly after this.
Was it this movie that did
it? No, but
I'm
saying it was definitely after
this. Oh, it was definitely after this. Exactly. But what was the movie? Because as I was looking through movies, I thought, well, it's no way it's First Class. That can't be the first one. But if you look at the history.
Prometheus was before that, right?
No,
after.
That was
the first time I really noticed him was in First Class.
Prometheus is after that. And so I'm digging through all this stuff, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, he did nothing really. Like, it wasn't until First Class that things really took off. And I know that's not true in the minds and hearts of fans. I think people liked him a long time, but I don't think anyone knows why they did. It wasn't because of this.
Fassbender. That's just you don't forget that.
Maybe, but I mean the guys. I mean now he's top brass actor man. People want him in everything, and we'll see how Assassin's Creed goes. I'm a little worried about it. To be honest,
he's Harry. Yeah. He's Harry Hole in the Snowman. It's Harry Hole. There's a porn parody for you.
What? Harry Hole, really?
Post-production for 2017, The Snowman, Michael Fassbender plays Harry Hole.
Wow. Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. But if you look at his stuff, I'm not kidding you. It's weird.
I'm not looking at his stuff.
So look at before 300, it's all nothing anyone knows about. All right. A few things here and there, but a lot of like British TV and things. And then you go Trial and Retribution, Angel, Wedding Bells. None of these sound familiar. That's because no one knows what these are. Hunger, Eden Lake. The Devil Whore, some TV miniseries in BBC. Fish Tank, Inglourious Bastards, boom, 2009. Okay, now we're somewhere. I didn't know he was in that either, but there it is.
Oh, yeah, I remember him in that. That was great.
Blood Creek, Man on a Motorcycle, Centurion, Jonah Hex, total bomb. Fable 3, the video game, Jane Eyre, and then X-Men First Class. I think X-Men First Class was the big time.
Yeah.
But that doesn't sound right, does it?
No.
That's so weird to me. Because now I feel like he's been like a household name for decades.
Right. Well, I tell you, I saw him in First Class and I really enjoyed him there. And I was like, oh, I'm going to put that down for a little note of actors I enjoyed. And then when Prometheus came along, I have watched that movie so many times. Mm. He is just, I love him.
Brian was right, by the way. Prometheus was first. I'm in it. Oh, no. Wait. No,
that was later on.
Sorry, that was after. First Class, then Prometheus. Prometheus was 2013.
But they're not very far apart, though. I mean, it's...
A year or something, right? A
couple of years.
Yeah. He's great, though. I mean, the best thing about Prometheus was him. He's the best thing in there. And he's David again in Alien Covenant, which comes out next year, which I'm very excited about.
So I spent some time memorizing all of this, and I just want to get it out there. It may not come in handy at all, okay?
All right.
But, okay, so Leonidas is our movie. He's our Gerard Butler. He's the main guy.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Okay.
He's our man. If he can't do it, no one
That's
can.
Right. His pecs and his rib cage.
So there's two bad guys, one foreign, one domestic.
Yeah.
The domestic bad guy is Theron.
Theron?
Theron is the long, greasy-haired guy who rapes the Queen Gorgo.
Right, and then Chinbeard dude.
Dominic.
And then
Dominic,
for whatever reason has been accepting Persian bribes. I don't understand. That's like the worst plot point ever in a movie.
He's Brian and I's. He's Brian and I's age, by the way.
But, Brian, what good would Persian money do this guy?
It's gold. You can melt it down. But they're gonna take it. Plus, he's hoping that the Persians will take it over, and then his money will be good. But it also created one of the best scenes in the movie, which is where everybody just kind of stops and looks at the gold, like, what the crap? And they all go, traitor!
They all raise a fist. Traitor, traitor! Yep. Who
that's
are we telling?
Where it's
we all agree. It's, traitor!
Shame,
it's
really, shame!
Really, it's really about the shot of the money falling, and you're
it's
just supposed
money
to
shot.
Go with it.
The money shot. You thought it was King Leonidas' jump in that one scene where he's looking out. That was the money shot, but
No, it was
okay. So anyway, so that's Theron. All right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Our narrator is Dilios.
These all sound like Warcraft.
What's the Dilios?
These are all Warcraft raid bosses or something. Anyway, yeah. Keep going.
Right. His job is to go around all over Greece to every campfire and tell an ever increasingly exaggerated story to get the Greeks to rise up and fight. Okay. That's Dilios, and he was Faramir in the Lord of the Rings. Okay.
What's the Dilios?
We have Leonidas the good guy, Theron the bad guy, Dilios the narrator.
Yep. The third wing, which comes out 3 weeks after the patch lands, then we'll fight. anyway, go ahead.
And then Fassbender plays Stelios, right? Stelios is one of Leonidas's main lieutenants.
Yep.
And the guy who ultimately his stalwart defense of everyone is what causes Leonidas to realize that he's got to sacrifice everything.
Right.
Okay.
Right,
that's right. Stelios. And then we get to, like, immediately there's this huge drop off. Now, you don't really need to know any of the other characters. Like, the guy who loses his son is literally named Captain.
Yeah.
Yeah, Captain.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We never get an actual name of
that
guy?
In the credits, his name is Captain. Nope.
God, at least we find out his son's name.
Well, good. I was worried he might be transgender number three, but you're right. He's Captain. That was weird.
But there are a lot of other Well, I'll let you explain that in a second, Brian, so we don't get a bunch of emails from people. But the guy, him and his son, that whole sub story was really affecting to me at the time, but I didn't realize how not. It's barely a subplot. Like, it's just in there, and it seemed bigger in the theater
and,
for some reason.
And it's ludicrous. We watch his son doing this amazing fighting, and you're like, oh, that's the young one. He's out there killing everybody. And then someone's riding up behind him on horseback. He doesn't hear them coming. He's one of the Greek 300, one of the greatest warriors to ever live. He gets caught unawares with his back turned. Like, come on.
It's because his dad was like, son, you did good. And he was like, yeah, dad, finally you smiled at me.
I'm
oh, shit.
You.
Yeah. I want to be
now
you.
I have no hair.
You taught me, dad. You taught me.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, remember all the stories about how Spartans are trained to be strong and stoic?
Yeah.
Apparently, Captain, they found a limit. They found a limit to all of that stoicism.
Well, and they explained that. They said that. They even talked about it. Like, he became drunk with bloodlust and, you know, it was not the normal Spartan, whatever, for a moment.
So that you just a perfect little segue here. can we talk about this in D&D/Warcraft terms?
Sure, always. Anything.
My gosh.
Yeah, let's do it.
When he casts bloodlust, it is amazing.
Well, it took him a while because he was like, all right, I'm going to get pissed. No, it's on cooldown. We got another minute or something. Okay, all right. And then those guys, I mean, what I always liked about this movie, since you brought up those terms or putting it in that context, is that it is, and then the comic too, which I read before I ever saw the movie, they gleefully portray historical accuracy heavily mingled with a bunch of mythology in a way that always struck a chord with me, always worked really well for me. And maybe that's what they saw in him when they were thinking about who's going to direct all our hero movies over here or something, because that is what superhero movies are at their core, at least, you know, within Zack Snyder's vision, maybe. But this idea that you need to take these doses of reality and mix it, you know, pretty heavily with a bunch of fakery is really good in this movie. Like, they're great at making me go, oh, yeah, dude, there's some real history here. I'm going to go into deep hole in Wikipedia here, a deep hairy hole in Wikipedia, and I'm going to find all kinds of rad stuff about the actual Thermopylae battle, what was Persia like at the time, you know, what's going on with these Spartans.
What are they doing now?
Yeah. What are they up to now? What's going on? You know those guys have talent, right?
By the way, played fast and loose with all of that. Like,
yeah. Oh, of course they did.
Like, I remember what ancient Greece was, what it looked like from high school. And Sparta, the sea was to the south. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, we're going to march north to the sea. When they said that, I'm like, oh, right. This is based on a flimsy comic book.
Oh, yeah. They don't care. They don't give a shit about the facts, but they mingle it in such a way that works for me. And I love it because all of that, I mean, who doesn't love mythology? And then to bring it, to make it grounded a little bit, like they've got their own Stitches, basically, the Persian army who cuts people's heads off. Mm-hmm. And he's clearly like some Frankensteinian vision of some sort of half man, half beast sort of idea. Xerxes himself is like 8 foot tall, and like those kinds of exaggerations are just, they're just pulling it away barely from the realm. It's not just magic all the time. It's like sort of still, he can bleed. He's still nervous. He's still a big idiot. The hunchback dude who's basically just playing the role of, who's the biblical dude that traded Jesus for gold?
Judas.
He's the Judas. And in fact, they have a cut scene, according to the trivia, where he threw himself off a cliff.
Sure did. And I have it on the DVD. I watched it, and it's funny because it was still left. Like, it doesn't change any of the latter parts of the movie. He doesn't die from throwing himself off a cliff. He wakes up and he's in Xerxes's palace. Mm-hmm. And basically just goes right into, hey, you like these wenches? Look, they can climb all over you.
So there's really goes right back to having a bunch of naked third-degree burn victim ladies like drag grinding all over him again.
Exactly, because his whole thing is he wants to die like a Spartan and be, you know, die wearing the clothes of a Spartan. And so the fact that he doesn't die is kind of like the ultimate insult.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, it was awesome when Leonidas told him that, may you live forever, sucker.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
No, you'd rather not live forever as a Persian, but die a Spartan is the idea, mm-hmm. I guess. All right. Well, that's interesting. I didn't know it went that far.
The thing that I feel is like really important about all that stuff, like the overselling of the rhinoceros, right? Like it's sold to you as this, the worst, most mean, most successful war beast ever. And they bring it down with one stick thrown well, you know what I mean? Like, all of that. There's a shot of elephants falling off a cliff.
Yeah, and the narration explains that, you know, they're clumsy beast and they think it's all about intimidation, right?
Right. But I'm saying that if you stop and hold it against this movie, and you're allowed to do this, but if you hold it against this film that it doesn't make sense, these things, then you're going to miss all the fun of the movie. Because the fun is in the ridiculousness of these elephants falling off this cliff. And the beauty of the visual.
Mm. Right. Did you feel a twinge of like, oh no, that poor elephant?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Part of it, but also.
No elephants were harmed in the making of this film. Don't worry, Brian.
Randy, you just hit on a really important point and why I think the movie holds up and is an artistic, a real vision to me. And that is that the movie's not about, like, this is where he fails with Superman and Batman. He's trying to be this visual filmmaker when what we need is some personal filmmaking about characters and characterization, mm-hmm. even though they're kind of broadly painted in a lot of films in the past, these two iconic superheroes need a little more personal attention. And they're not getting that from Zack Snyder. But in this case, you can do these broad strokes. You can say Leonidas is just the greatest king of all time and beat a wolf by himself in a crag in the rocks and survived the winter and became king. And you can just paint these.
It's a much simpler story.
It's a far simpler story. It's a what's the word? There's a word for this. It's just a legend. It's told as a legend. Yeah. It's like you're all around a fire. Literally, this guy is around a fire with a patch over his eye, drawing in the sand what happened and telling people. And then the great, you know, and that's the story we're getting. To me, there's something special about that. And so it totally works. I wish he would just keep making that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there a DC character you can think of where this would work? So maybe not taking the two, you know, biggest properties DC has, but kind of like doing what Marvel does and how each different film is its own unique like movie genre.
Mm-hmm. Aquaman.
Aquaman was the first thing I came up with. And it's funny because it's like, yeah, that could be kind of a legendary tale of like,
you know, you could film it in this style, this and the Sucker Punch, Zack Snyder Sucker Punch style,
yeah.
which I think was the best part of the and only good part of Sucker Punch was the visuals.
Yeah.
He's the producer on Aquaman. Yeah, so you might get a little flavor.
You might, but I don't think that.
I don't think
they're
so.
Trying to distance themselves from that a bit. I think I get the feeling.
Yeah. Anyway. Which is a mistake. I think that, this is the kind of visuals that I think Zack Snyder does really well. Again, you know, Sucker Punch may not have been a good movie, but visually it was very okay. I know you're the
one Sucker holdout.
Punch apologist. I like Sucker Punch.
Yeah, you like it for. Well, I think he likes it for the reason Brian likes the visuals. The movie's got great visuals, but the problem is that story needed a personal story, and they couldn't do it.
Snyder is a great visual storyteller, mm-hmm. in my opinion. There's a lot going on that. I'm not saying that Zack Snyder is for everybody. As a matter of fact, I think it's proven that most people don't care for that kind of storytelling overall, except for exceptions, like Scott said, with 300.
Mm-hmm.
But I like all the Zack Snyder films, even Batman vs. Superman.
You're crazy.
I liked
really?
All of them.
You're crazy. Wow.
I liked all of them.
I like everything up. I loved
I think
his remake.
I think I'm getting something different than...
Maybe, but let's discuss this though. So Zack Snyder, he's a topic of conversation. So may as well have the conversation. He made a remake of Dawn of the Dead, which is really good. I loved it. Thought it was fantastic.
It blew me away because I didn't know anything about Zack Snyder at the time, and when I saw that, there is something special about this.
And that was just 2 years before this, so he got noticed for that, and things moved pretty quickly for him. Then he did this. Then he did. Watchmen, which I think is great. I think the Watchmen is not only hard to adapt, but I think they handled it pretty deftly. I was really impressed with it, and I think it again appealed to his style, and it was great.
I don't think anyone could have done Mr. Manhattan
without him. 4 years of blue paint school.
Mr. Pibbs over here drinking. You're right, Dr. Manhattan. Excuse me.
He didn't go to four. Wait. Did you say 4 years of blue paint school? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Blue paint school.
The CGI.
I put this on my ding dong.
That CGI penis is amazing in that movie. But anyway, no, like that's a really cool thing. And then what does he do? Sucker Punch. Everyone's excited. I was excited. I was jazzed. I couldn't wait. And then it was just so disappointing on a story level. And then it's never gotten better. These stories have all been sort of just bad. And I don't know what's going on. Like, maybe it's because he's not up and coming anymore. Maybe it's because he doesn't have the hunger he used to have for, like, taking the visual storytelling style that he possesses and making something special out of
still,
it. I don't know.
I honestly, I think he's still trying to grow. I think you're seeing, it's kind of like, I think 300 was one of those things where a young artist just comes up with something that's brilliant and this works and flows. And then he spends, you know, the next 10, 15 years trying to figure out what he did right so that he can intentionally do that in the future. So I feel like he's kind of going through that phase where he's still trying to figure it out. And I think we're going to see as an older Zack Snyder that's going to bring us some more great films.
I think what you need with Zack Snyder is you need a good writer. He wrote the screenplay for Sucker Punch. But Alan Moore, of course, wrote Watchmen. Frank Miller wrote 300. And I think what you need to do is pair him up with a really, really good writer. And maybe, you know, maybe if Superman Batman was, instead of it being a relatively new story that's not based on anything kind of existing, and they took maybe a DC storyline that they kind of adapted for the film, maybe it would have been better.
Mm-hmm. That's my thinking. I like that. I like where your head's at.
I would argue that Zack Snyder is similar to Michael Bay in a way.
Yeah, I can see that.
And it's you can always predict that someone's going to grow up and become, you know, a mature auteur. You can always predict that. You can take anybody. They usually don't. They usually get more and more focused on what they think is working. Mm-hmm. So like Michael Bay, even though he's a great cinematographer, he got more and more focused on fast cut action, right? Because he thought that's what's working for me.
And cars and, disguised as robots. He got into that real heavy.
Zack Snyder constantly strikes me as a director. And this is just my opinion, folks, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
He constantly strikes me as a director who is convinced that he knows what a 19-year-old boy in his audience is going to want to see and feel.
Mm.
And he's just going to keep doubling down on that. And go and quite frankly, I think a lot of times he's wrong. He doesn't actually have access to that mindset of his chosen audience, 19-year-old sex-starved boy.
Well, he knew what a 35-year-old man wanted to see in 2006. I can tell you
that. Sure, maybe. I think
man,
I think,
boy.
Yeah. I think this film succeeds in declaring my audience is very hyper masculine, and I'm going to give them that. You know?
Yeah.
Like, you made a tweet where you called a bunch of dudes with painted abs, like man cake or something. Yeah. But you and I both know women don't love this movie.
Man candy.
Oh, that's not true.
My wife really likes this movie a lot.
Right, that's not true at all, because my fiance, she's never seen 300, which blew my mind. I'm like, you've never seen 300? Sit down. Let me regale you with a tale. And so she was like resistant, like, I don't know. And then she started watching. She's like, this is the most badass movie I have seen in a very long time.
It's super cool, but listen, I'm with Randy in this one regard. It's not like you're going to ever have, like, when my wife has her ladies' nights with all her friends and they all go do something fun, none of them are saying, all right, first we're going to do this, then we're going to get mani-pedis, then we're going to go over and get lunch over here. Oh, did you hear about the coffee shop? Yep. Hey, let's finish the night with a watching of 300. What do you girls say? They don't do that. But as a thing that she enjoyed watching with me and, in the theater and here, she really likes this movie. So I think it's possible to actually, I don't know, she likes Marvel superhero movies, but she's not going to suggest Thor Ragnarok to her and her girlfriends when they go to see a movie. That's just not going to be the thing they do. And look, we're going to get emails going, I can't believe how broadly you have pigeonholed men
with
and women.
Big paint.
You can do that all you want, but that's just there's differences. Okay. There's just differences. And I agree for the most part that this is not made for them. It's just good. Like this thing has a cohesive story that's simple and as long as any stories we've ever told. It's as ancient as time, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like it's all the tropes are tropes we all know. It all feels familiar. You know, everything about it's like, oh yeah, this is where we should be at this point in the thing. It's never slowing down. It never feels like it drags. It's just a good, well-constructed, visually impressive, cool movie that I refuse to find too much fault with. I mean, we could nitpick, but it's just kind of badass and awesome. And they do, there's some things in it where, you know, we talk about the effects and stuff, but for the most part, like the fighting is real good. Like the choreography is insane. The quick cut, like slow motion to fast motion, slow motion back again, stuff is so cool.
A little too much slow-mo for my tastes. This is a 15-minute film.
Yes. True story. True
That's
story.
Probably
I thought
true.
The same
That's
thing
probably
when I was
true.
Watching the beginning of it. I was like, wow, he drug out that one scene for like, it probably didn't take 5 minutes worth of film, but it was like
I just love seeing it, though.
This is a question I've asked on this show before, and I think it's a question that's always for men, because you will never find women.
Men question.
You will not find a woman making a movie using a bunch of slow-mo. Yeah. What do we like so much about slow-mo, both in making a movie and watching a movie? What is it about that?
Anticipation.
That men think is so freaking cool and strong.
It's the whole thing that when we were kids and we had a lightsaber that we were pretending was a real sword, or we had a stick that we were pretending was a sword, and we're like swinging it, but we're swinging it in slow motion. We're hitting the tin can on the fence going, deesh, you know, and it's like,
is this that. All the $6 million man's fault? I mean, that we grew up with that.
It is. There you go.
But my question, like, I don't know that me doing that slow-mo play acting when I was a kid, mm-hmm. I don't know that predates me seeing it on TV or something.
$6 million like, man.
Oh, sure. Sure it does. I think it does. Because $6 million man was the thing, and slow motion sports recaps and stuff like that were a thing when you were a kid. Sure. But it's not done to the way, to the effect that it is now with slow-mo, where it's something big is getting hit. Somebody's getting their head taken off and you're seeing this in slow motion.
Yeah, I saw Rocky get hit.
It weight.
I saw Rocky get hit real slow. Apollo Creed getting hit real slow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why is the question. Why did you see that? Why was that a thing? I will guarantee you, if you go back in time 1,000 years, there's no Aboriginal American with a bow and arrow kid learning how to use it going, hey, Indian friends, check this out. I'm going to draw it real slow and cool. And then we're going to pretend the arrow's flying really slow.
Yeah, like, no, you're right. I don't know what the origin is. I think popular culture-wise, it was just sort of there. But where did it originate? I don't know. It's very odd. That's a great question. Like,
it's a
was
good effect, though, because it gives weight to the scene.
I don't know about women directors never using slow-mo. I don't think I'd jive with that. But the idea of of slow motion as a thing to do, period. I don't know. It was the advent of photography and the ability to slow stuff down.
There had to be some slow-mo in the Hurt Locker.
Oh, guaranteed.
I'm sure there was. I'm sure there was.
Yeah, guaranteed.
Like, it wasn't like the film was entirely made by one woman with a camera who took her film to the editing bay. And also, again, you make a film and you think, what's my audience? What do they want to see? Yeah. And I'm going to explode.
Oh, sneezing. Don't explode. I thought you were yawning.
Live on. So, but seriously, if there's a listener out there who has some insight as to the origins of slow motion, maybe the internet, I've been trying to search while you guys have been talking. There's no like definitive anything of slow motion.
And it's not just the slow motion, but it's the slow motion cut back to fast motion, cut back to slow motion. Because again, if you would have seen the Rocky fight, and he, you know, every time he hits, oh my God, who does Rocky hit? It's Apollo Creed. Thank you.
Yeah.
In the first one, every time he hits Apollo Creed, it slows back down. But then when he's pulling his arm back, zoop, it's back into regular motion, and then he hits him again at slow motion. That's the kind of thing that you're seeing nowadays. Less so cut this scene only in slow motion, then do another cut to another point of view kind of thing.
Well, it says here
slow
from
motion.
It says here 1882.
Right.
The first slow motion picture taken with a high speed camera and then slowed down was developed. Made by somebody named Tien Jules Marie, some French dude.
I'm seeing Austrian priest August Musger in early 20th century. That's Wikipedia, so I don't know.
Yeah, this other, who knows? I'm at precinemahistory.net. Like, who knows? But the point is that there's probably no definitive thing. But moreover, what is the appeal? Like, what is it that's what interests me?
I think it's a heightened, you know, it's a heightened reality. It gives you an opportunity to see everything that is going on, every nuance, it's just overly.
That's for sure. If you're gonna spend millions of dollars giving everybody big, bulky, painted on abs, and then you don't let me see them, you know what I'm saying? Like
I want to know how much of those abs are. I mean, sure, they enhanced them. Sure, I mean, Leonidas is wearing eyeshadow to deepen his eyes and stuff, and I'm sure they also airbrushed on some of the ab creases and stuff. But didn't they have ab camp? You know, they must have.
They did. Oh, they totally did. And that's one in the trivia on IMDb. They talked about how there's this rigorous exercise schedule that they were all on, where they'd have to, I'm sure, eat 11 chicken breasts and then go run around. I can't find the note. I'm looking through the trivia right now. But what was really cool, and this is just for memory, is that the exercise routine that this guy put them through, they changed everything every day. They did something different because they didn't want their muscles to get used to that exercise.
Right.
And so it was like a different kind of exercise every day for that. The one more real quick thing about the slow-mo too. I deep dived into the DVDs and watched the special edition stuff and all the deleted scenes. And there's even a hidden Easter egg on the DVD where Zack Snyder talks about trying to pitch this movie and how the studio says, no, I don't think so. We're not that interested. And what they did is they took the Frank Miller comic book art and photoshopped out all the word balloons and then had Scott Glenn do a narration for the whole thing and then pitch that to them. And they're like, oh, that's pretty cool. Still not sure. And then they did like a 2-minute segment with a Spartan killing a bunch of Persians, and it was done with that slow motion, high speed motion, slow motion, high speed motion,
and that was
kind of the one that helped sell the film.
See, that's hilarious, and there must be something to that. I remember the Comic-Con footage of them fighting the thick necked dude that ended up getting his eye poked and his head cut off.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They kept showing that on the internet. I remember the internet losing their minds, and probably same reasons. Very very weird, ethereal quality to the slow motion. It was like violence porn in some ways, I suppose.
Right.
I don't know what that says about us as a people, but it definitely does draw people in. It's interesting that you said that they had to be sold so hard on it. Mm-hmm. According to what I could find, the studio didn't expect it to make more than $75 million total. Ended up doing 200 plus, which, you know, made it a very successful film that year. But it's always so funny to me how nervous Hollywood is and how convinced they have to be And even after they've been convinced how freaking nervous they are to put, you know, to put their necks on the line, and then the thing ends up killing it. It's just how anything gets made, I don't know. Like, how many projects just got shit canned because executives suck? Right. Yeah. It's kind of annoying me now that I'm saying it out loud. what else? There's some other stuff. Warner Brothers was hoping to gross in the region of Sin City, which was $74 million. So Sin City made a lot less. Maybe that's what they were basing it on. As they were like, oh, the other Frank Miller thing.
I think this is, this would be a direct correlation to Sin City. They probably, as the Hollywood execs probably saw it, it was basically Sin City Part 2, just more of the same.
Mm-hmm.
Stylized graphic novel interpretation.
Yeah. Yep, yep. Leonidas's father in the film, played by Tim Connolly, the one that smacked him when he was little.
Oh, yeah, right.
That's Gerard Butler's stunt double for the film. And then the cool thing is that the kid who's playing young Leonidas in the child age version of Leonidas was Zack Snyder's kid. So he put him out there and said, all right, you're going to get smacked around by this guy that creepily looks like me.
And we're going to have a wolf, wolf fight kind of thing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
wolf fight was cool.
As he got older and he was getting whipped, he looked like young Captain America. What's his name? Chris Evans.
Chris.
Isn't that weird? He looked like Chris Evans to me.
It's something that really struck me about this movie is that it includes pretty much every kind of human horror. It includes infanticide, rape, obvious straight up homicide, rape, revenge, genocide,
body horror of every type.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like there's just every kind of thing, but somehow in the describing of it, I am being more outrageous than the movie is itself. Like, somehow you come away from this movie and no one ever says, wow, that movie was really nothing but infanticide and child abuse and rape. Mm-hmm. You know, like you say that, it just feels like you're somehow not describing the movie accurately.
Yeah, this won't surprise anyone who knows me, or especially Brian Ibbett, where this stuff gets brought up on TMS a lot. Mm-hmm. But what do you think the thing I thought was grossest?
I know, I was just about to say, like, what...
I know where we're going with that.
You're going to be, I think you might be surprised, but then you won't. You'll hear me say it and you'll go, oh, yeah, of course you do. But it's completely grossed me out. So what do you think it was? Let's take a wild guess.
So trying to figure out what somebody puts in their mouth.
Right? I would say I know what it is.
The easy answer is the Hunchback's prosthetic.
Okay, like, that's not that, but go ahead, Brian. Dunaway, what'd you?
Okay, I think it was the scene where the elders are licking the lady. I think that was
I'll put that one up there. But you know what actually helps me in that is knowing that when she performed that model, she's in water when she performed
that. Was cool. Yeah,
which is a cool effect, but in my head that made it okay, because then next time she had to spaz out, she'd wash all the old man lick off
the elder lick.
Yeah, the elder lick. But here's elder the juice. Part that grossed me out the most, and it's kind of cerebral and sort of makes you it requires you to think ahead, but when he kicks, he announces that this is Sparta and kicks like six dudes down the well, I could think of was, now there are dead, corroding, bloated bodies, disgusting bodies in the water system. Don't drink the water in Sparta, dude. Don't get a freaking a Brita filter, do something, because
just and so you know, was it a dried up well?
Was yeah, just so the, you know, Scott. Yeah, that was the killing hole. That wasn't a well. The actual killing water hole comes from a well out in that wheat field.
Well, maybe. I'm just saying. All you know is there's stinky six bodies in there just roasting in the Spartan sun. Yes.
And I don't know if it's just playing too much Prince of Persia, but were you guys expecting there to be spikes at the bottom of that hole? Like, as you're following the Persian down there, you're like expecting
I'm expecting to run across, kind of stumble as I stop, and then have the ground beneath me crack and then land.
A little pressure plate you're going to step on. Yep.
I just wasn't expecting the cameraman to dive in after the dying people. Like, why are we going down this well?
They just threw the camera. Cameraman stayed up top.
Yeah.
Then they had to retrieve the film. Yeah. The cameraman, it's funny.
He's got him a rope.
When you're watching anything, you are always the perspective of the cameraman. And there's times when you don't really think about it. Oh, there's a cameraman standing in the middle of this battlefield. You don't think about that.
Mm-hmm.
But when the camera's moving, you can sometimes go, oh, wow. Like, how am I hovering way off the coast of this cliff? That's interesting.
Yep.
And when the camera dives down a well, like, whoa.
And the other funny thing is that you're watching a movie where people are getting dowel-sized arrows through their chests and getting their heads hacked off and arms hacked off and knives in the eye and all these horrible, painful depictions of violent sort of, you know, war. And the thing that grosses me out the most in the actual fighting was Rodrigo Santoro, a.k.a. Xerxes, having a spear graze the side of his face and take out like 12 of his like 33 fake piercings.
Do they know how piercing works? You just don't just pick a random spot on your face and pierce it. What's wrong with these people?
Well, Xerxes, man, he's excess, yeah. All about excess.
You know, he ran out of ears and ran out of noses.
That's
and,
right.
Yeah, and Zack Snyder really does like messing with flesh. Mm-hmm. Like this whole movie, it's very rare that you see someone that just looks like a person. You know,
yeah,
just right. A human being.
Yeah,
no. Their flesh is covered with piercings and tattoos and wounds and big prosthetic humps on their backs and so
especially
on.
The Persians, they're all just they've got some fashion stuff going on. Like they've got some issues over there. I think they care about that stuff a bit too much. And some of their hats and their stupid clothes and just stupid. I mean, just stupid.
I can't
stupid.
Wait to get the hate mail on that one.
Well, no, dude, fake Persians from 300. I'm not talking about today's
fake Persians, not real Persians.
I'm not talking about, hey, all the Iranians all out right. there listening, you have weird clothes. No, I'm saying like, it's just that it's this amplified, exaggerated version of they're living to excess. And you can when you get so big, you think you're never going to fail, but you're about to big time. And, you know, I mean, I like it. Don't get me wrong. But man, those guys have bad ideas of what's good to wear in the desert, you know, especially the guy, what were they? The immortals with the face masks.
Oh, those were cool.
Those were really
sons
cool.
of the harpy looking.
Oh yeah, totally. That's what it reminded me of. Actually, every time anybody,
just wildly impractical helm.
Yeah.
Like that's again, I can't stop going back to D&D and World of Warcraft, wildly impractical helm.
All of it was, but it was, I mean, it showed you the difference between real warriors, the Spartans, who didn't need anything except for a shield and a spear, and then versus
and a loincloth.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the Persian army, who to excess was all about intimidation. And so their actual abilities to effectively fight was not that great. It was all about intimidation.
Yeah, I would agree with that. By the way, also, if anyone had noticed, I noticed this. You got a naked dude. Let's just put his whole butt in the shadow. But let's go ahead and have Cersei Lannister over there get all topless and jigger-jaggy on us there. Let's have that happen. That seems
Why
a little unfair.
Why do we need a 300 porn? This was porn.
It kind of was. It's like a sepia-toned sex tape.
Yeah.
The Oracle dance sequence was particularly unnecessary. Like,
a little gyrating.
I
thought it was
it's just erotica.
It's kind of cool, but Brian, really? But I agree with Randy. It's not like it is meant to titillate. It's not supposed to be, ooh, how artistic and... Right. It's like, no, right. That's a close-up of a nipple, and over here we see the outline of what probably is her crotch.
I think it really heightened the uncomfortableness that you felt from the elders. I mean, it was like, I think it heightened the scene.
Those guys are gross, dude. They're so gross.
Right.
Everything about them is effective for what they're supposed to be, which is this washed-up religious order that really shouldn't be a part of the deal-making anymore, but yet there they are licking girls and... Oh, they're just, they're vile. And
this is exactly what you were supposed to get from it, right?
Yeah. No, you're right. I got exactly out of that what I think was intended. But his tongue was just like, ugh, his tongue is like had like bumps on it and like weird little pustules and stuff. Really gross. Those guys are in lots of other stuff where they basically play hunchback looking gross dudes. That's their job in Hollywood. That's like all they've done. what else? I forgot about the subplot about they did the 300 number because the priest said that he couldn't go to war and then tweak the rules. Like I forgot all about that. This was him subverting the law.
We're going on a walk.
Yeah, I forgot that. I couldn't remember why it was only 300. Like in my head, it was because that's all that's left or something. But no, it was just 300 of the best dudes, and he just called them pals and said, "Yeah, we're just walking away." And got around the law or got around the ruling.
Plus, we're not going to war. We're just taking a stroll in our army.
Forgot all about that.
Yeah, I did too.
And that was real, right? That part, not the priest licking floaty lady, but
legend says.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, historically, do we know anything about why it was just 300? Maybe we don't. Did nobody look this up? I didn't look it up.
Historically, Film Sack don't know.
Yeah.
Historically, the human race probably knows.
Yeah. I don't know, but on the whole, I just don't have a lot of bad things to say about it. I just like it. I like it a lot, and I'd watch it again. And I don't even find it that... Randy said it pretty well earlier. It's, like, violent, but kind of not really. Like it's in this weird place of like, because nothing feels that real. It just doesn't, right. I don't know. It doesn't, none of it feels permanent or destructive or awful. It just feels like a,
it is so visually unusual that when you describe what you saw, you sound wrong. You sound like you didn't actually, you're not describing the actual,
or that thought. You're watching terrible entertainment, like the most corrosive possible, morally reprehensible entertainment. But when you actually see it, you're like, oh no, this is like, I don't know, this is like taking Warcraft too seriously or something. Like it's just a goofball. It's just goofy and it's awesome. So if you haven't seen 300, don't take our,
and why are you listening to our show?
Yeah, what are you doing? That's a good point. Anyone have anything else?
Listen to these without watching the movies.
Some people do, but anyone have any added things before we get to clips? Anything at all?
Oh man, I mean, just body piles freak me out.
Okay,
I don't like body piles. That in the movie,
especially
there
like
was
a wall of body piles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't like that.
You don't like it?
Sounds like a really flimsy wall.
Right.
It does.
Yeah. They're really hard to balance because we're round, you know, we're not like Lego blocks.
Right.
Like, you know, every other stone is actually a body in here. So now we can't go that way. Yeah, you can.
What bothers you more though, Dunaway, is that the wall is made of bodies or that you would be required as one of the 300 Spartans to hide in the bodies and then pop out and say surprise.
Mm. Right.
Surprise.
The whole thing just freaks me the creep out, man.
Yeah, I don't like it.
All those dead bodies. I mean, I could probably deal with one or two dead bodies, but when you got a whole mountain of them, accidentally look down, look at one of them, one staring at you, eyeball all hanging out. No thanks.
Or the guys, impaled guys always gets me too. They showed them there too. Yeah. I can't deal with impaling. That's really gross to me.
Yeah.
Brian. What's an impaling, man?
I can deal with impaling because it's over so quick. It's like torture stuff I have a problem with, but impaling, it's like, all right, well, that's at least done
I
with.
Think I'd no, feel it for a while though, because the sword or the poke, the thing in the ground is going up your bum and all the way out your mouth.
Well, okay, yeah, that's
I don't think
hopefully
I would,
that not, happened. Hopefully that happened post mortem.
I didn't think about that.
I try not to look too closely at the fight choreography sometimes because I felt like a lot of scenes were amazing, but every once in a while, I think I'd catch an extra out of the corner of my eye, just kind of standing around, kind of not putting everything into it.
It is, well,
not trying to quickly look away. I'm like,
that's a super common trope is that you've got a big army of people who are fighting off one guy or a dozen guys or whatever. And it's like, instead of everybody kind of dogpiling this guy, they kind of wait and do the, well, let's try and take him on one at a time because he clearly is
right.
Yeah,
but I mean that's such a movie trope that, you know, this is hardly the first offender of it. Yeah. even the original, when the original 300 happened, when the original Battle of Thermopylae happened, it wasn't even the first time that happened.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm not gonna lie, if I was a Spartan, I'd probably be the dude standing around back to see how things play out. Let's see what happens here.
If I had been a Spartan, and I could only do one thing in this movie, it would be I would have gone up to Leonidas at the middle of the movie, the dead center, and said, I thought this as it was happening, you could have asked the Hunchback to go guard the goat path, and you would have given him something to do, and he probably would have accepted it as a good thing.
No, like, but he had to go all Simon Cowell on him and give him the straight dope.
Yeah.
Maybe Leonidas would have just taken my head off right then because I'm talking back to the king, but come on. How can you not see that you're making this guy into a betrayer?
Freaking Dunaway has got this thing in my head now where Simon Cowell is being followed by James Hung on a hill somewhere.
I've heard better performances in subway stations.
She bangs up from the hill there.
The only other thing I had in my notes that I don't know why I wanted to bring it up, but the dude with the whip, the whip cracking guy, and Leonidas slices his arm off in mid whipping.
Yeah.
The guy goes, "My arm!" And there's no way you'd do that. If you had your arm sliced off, you wouldn't need to say, "Oh, my arm."
Yeah. Right. Well, I'm trying to think what you would say. This happens a lot. What would you? I think I'd just go something like that.
Something like, "No."
Yeah, being a, I don't know. I kind of thought the same thing too. That's kind of weird. But also the Persians' portrayal in this movie was, they were almost not human. The fact that body modification, losing an arm, losing body parts was almost like getting your ear pierced. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's like getting dental work done.
Yeah, that actually reminded me of the time I got kicked off of a church softball team.
No, you're supposed to say, did I ever tell you about the time?
Tell you about the time.
This is just the truth. I got kicked off a church softball team.
Yeah.
And it was because of a natural reaction to something. I was playing third base.
Okay.
And
I love playing third
base. The opponent.
I think we're seeing the problem before you go any further. Yeah.
No, that's right.
We were playing against a satanic church.
Okay. No,
So I was playing third base, and the opponent popped the ball straight up, and it was going to be out of bounds. What's it called? I didn't have to catch it. It was between the foul line and the dugout.
Right.
In my parked car.
And I was the only person who could catch it. If I caught it, it was going to be an out. If it dropped, they were just going to get to try again.
They kicked you off?
No, hold on.
Oh, okay.
Ball pops up, and I start moving over, and it's nighttime, and there's big flashy lights over the field. And I just didn't track it very well. Mm-hmm. And the ball fell harmlessly to the ground 3 feet behind me.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I yelled, only instead of what I just said, it was the F word.
Oh, wow. I thought you might have went with shit or something, but wow, you dropped the F bomb.
The big old effer. Wow. Yeah, that's a big one. They kicked you off for that.
The whole field got quiet, gasped.
And just to clarify, I was politely asked after the game.
right. They didn't come rush out with like SS guys and take you out of there.
Yeah, and send me to church prison.
So I was really hoping that you were going to say, I caught the ball and yelled, Jesus is dumb. And that's why they kicked off.
No. But my point is my natural reaction, I had nothing to do with it, like consciously. I was not consciously choosing anything in that moment. Mm. It was frustration came out of my lungs. And so I'm saying this guy getting his arm cut off, there's no way he is going to naturally say, my arm.
My arm. It's super dumb.
Well, yeah, I know. I know your arm. I did that. Yeah. You don't have to tell me.
I cut your... Not only did I do that, I magnetoed right up in the sky and came down and cut it off when you least expected it. Oh, Fassbender. Right. He's pretty built. I'll give that guy some credit. I watched part of that movie where his wiener's out a lot. What was that called? Shame, was it?
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of fast bender, although I wouldn't call it all that bendery, if you know what I'm saying. It's a little less
bendery. So every time a actor is depicted as a character with a huge naked wang, it's just always, there's always a question. Is that real?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that one was real.
Every time.
I think he was showing his real wiener. I think. I break in here with a break. This is a break, everybody. We're taking one of those breaks, and we're talking about our new friends at HostPapa.com. HostPapa.com, you may have heard on other shows here on the Frog Pants Network. Well, I'm glad to be bringing it at FilmSack as well, because I know that on the earhole plugs right now, we have plenty of you who are small business owners, and you have all struggled with the idea of what to do on the web for your small business. Well, good news. HostPapa.com is here to save you. HostPapa's complete turnkey solutions make it easy for small business owners like you to get your website up and running. No limit to how awesome your website can be. Easy to use drag and drop website builders along with one-click WordPress installers. Everything you need to get your website up in no time at all. Professional email, automated website backups, cutting-edge security, and hundreds of cloud-based productivity tools. They're the best with 24/7 365 support. And if you need extra help, we'll even give you a free consult, 30-minute one-on-one session with one of their experts for absolutely free. They'll transfer your existing domain for free. They'll help you set that up for free. All they ask is that you try it out and get a 30-day money-back guarantee. No risk. Unconditional 30-day money-back guarantee. Shared hosting accounts start as low as $3.95 a month. And again, even a new domain they'll throw in for free. All this freeness. So here's what I want you to do, film sackers. If you're a small business owner, digital entrepreneur, or freelancer, go to hostpapa.com/filmsack. Check out what our friends have to offer there. Because you're fans of this podcast, use this code, FILMSACK. That's 15% off new shared hosting accounts. Just enter the code FILMSACK at checkout for 15% off. That's hostpapa.com/filmsack and the code filmsack for 15% off powerful, reliable, and secure web hosting. That's hostpapa.com. Check them out. The clips are from the movie, and sure. We got some, and I'm going to play some now. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this. This is one from, this is early on. I don't remember. Here it is.
Enter the boy, given up for dead, returns to his people, to sacred Sparta, a king, our king, Leonidas!
Okay.
Oh.
Okay, so let me just stop you there. Hey. You're talking to the soldiers
who
have all been through this.
Yeah, well, not all of them, because now he's a member.
We're trying, this is 300, the next generation.
Yeah,
this is very early in the film. This is right?
Right, but no, he's not, but he's narrating. Speech. Right, but he's narrating to, like Brian said, the second generation. This is from the final scene when he's walking around with like thousands and thousands of dudes talking about the legendary Leonidas. So it's, in theory, there's, well, no, actually none of them are there because they all died. He's the only one that survived. So,
I'm saying at this point, what we know is that he is talking to people who have almost certainly been through what Leonidas went through as a boy. Like, that's just, I mean, you're like, it's just plain.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
And it's just weird. Like, yes. Okay. So it turns out that these people who are screaming are actually screaming about being told what they all endured.
Yeah. Like, Leonidas as a child went through this. Oh, really? I had a bear. What'd you guys have? Well, I had like a freaking raptor. It was terrible. Okay. Well, anyway. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Hadn't thought of that. But, you know, we need to know. It's us he's talking to at this point.
Right. It's dramatic.
There are people at that army that are like, dude, seriously, you're telling that story again? All right, one eye. Go ahead. All right. Here's the, what's this? Oh, I just want to hear this again. I thought that sounded real good.
Yeah,
sounded real good.
What's your name?
Here's, I wrote take that. It's 10 seconds. I don't know what it is.
Do not be coy or stupid, Persian. You can afford neither in Sparta.
What makes this woman think she can speak among men?
Because only Spartan women give birth to real men.
Ooh. Now I know why I wrote take that.
Seriously sounds like a sick burn written by a seventh grader.
You know, she's Lena Headley, lovely, lovely woman. Yeah. She's 42 now. Doesn't look it, does she? She's held her age nicely.
I know.
Yeah.
Here's one about blasphemy and madness.
This is blasphemy. This is madness.
Like literally, that was about blasphemy and madness. Mm-hmm.
Well done.
And now we've got a Scottish man using a lot of eshes in his words when he says,
"This is Sparta."
This is Sparta.
What?
Whoops. Okay, here's old man Liquorface.
What do you offer?
Old man Liquorface. I met him last week.
He's at the town, the South Carolinian drunk man.
Mm-hmm. Too close.
Here's something about gold.
Yes. And when Sparta burns, you shall bathe in gold.
Yeah. All right. Great.
That doesn't sound pleasant.
No.
Bathing in gold.
No, it sounds bad. Mm-hmm. All the little sharp, because their money was like smushed with hammers and stuff. There was no roundness to any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And a washcloth.
And maybe a bubble bath and some sort of incense. Fassbender talking.
Arcadian, I've fought countless times, yet I've never met an adversary who could offer me what we Spartans call a beautiful death.
Boy, those Arcadians, they were out of there the minute they could get gone, though.
Yeah.
It's like, well, shit. We're
good
out.
Luck, Leonidas.
Yep, we're
see
out.
Ya.
Out. Great line I wrote.
Our arrows will blot out the sun.
And we will fight in the shade.
Which apparently is an actual thing. There's a historical quote that supposedly was written down from the time. Like, that's not a
that's awesome.
Frank Miller line. That was a line they said then.
That's like one of my favorite lines from them. That's great.
Yeah. Really good. Here's another great line.
Give them nothing, but take from them everything.
It's Gul'dan there.
Very, very specific rules, sir.
Yeah. How much? We'll
right on that.
What should we take from them? Everything.
Everything. But what should we give them?
Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing. Okay. Hold on. I'm going to write this down because I don't want to get it backwards.
Yeah. Can I give them something? No. Everything. No, nothing. Yeah, it gets all confusing. How about this one? I found this old clip. This is what Brian Ibbett told his date, the morning of the prom.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the morning of the prom before it all happened. Okay, it was going to happen like out 5-6 hours later is when the prom was, but this is you early calling your date and telling her this.
Sure.
Ready your
sure.
breakfast and eat hearty. But tonight, we dine in hell.
It's a little rough. It's a little rough.
Well, the Red Lobster was booked right. already because of all the other people who planned ahead.
So where were y'all going that night? You're going to hell.
Going to hell.
You're going to hell.
Yeah, yeah. So eat your breakfast.
Hell has an opening.
Eat hearty, because tonight. I assume that meant that there's nothing to eat in hell. Is that what the?
You know,
I guess that's a good point. Yeah. Tonight we, eat hearty because tonight we dine in hell, and you want to be full. Because
I thought that was a bad idea to
the
get
food's
full
really
before.
Crap.
I was thinking it was a bad idea to get full before a big fight. I thought.
Yeah,
that was,
it is. No, it's a bad idea. I've run a lot of foot races, and I can tell you, you don't eat hearty before that athletic activity.
Yeah, you don't eat hearties before any activity.
Maybe you eat a banana.
Yeah.
Right. Like just so you have some energy for later in the battle.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to eat it. You don't want it like a big heavy meal. I've seen Band of Brothers, which Fassbender was also in. And right. I've seen what happens when you eat a bunch of spaghetti before you go run 10 miles. I know what's up. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Also, by the way, Daryl, this is for you if you're listening. He always thinks every movie ever has someone barfing in it at least once. Aww. This is a movie without a single person barfing in it. And it feels like a movie where someone should have barfed. At some point, mm-hmm. there should have been a guy lean over and barf, but no one ever did.
That's what the dude we lost his arm should have done.
Yeah,
instead of saying
just
anything,
barfed.
Just went, oh, yeah. My arm.
It really would have been adding insult to injury if they would have puked down the hole, the hole they kicked the messengers into.
Yeah, well said.
It's kind of more of an Italian thing to do than a Greek thing, I think.
All right, I got one last clip. Italian puking. This is one last guy, one last clip. He is saying Sparta in a weird way, so I captured it.
You fight for Sparta.
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 What does the Greek accent sound like? Did anyone in this movie actually have one?
No. I think they went out of their way to not sound or look Greek.
Yeah.
I think that's the one of the stylistic choices of this movie.
I mean, Xerxes is Brazilian and sounded very Spanish-ish. Mm-hmm. And like all the accents were all over the place. Nobody sounded the same. A few British here and there. What is Leonidas? He's Scottish, right? He's Scottish. He's from Scotland.
Well, yes. Gerard Butler is.
Yeah. Gerard Butler is Scottish.
Yeah, I don't mean as Leonidas.
And Scotland. David Wenham is Australian. I went out through all this.
Oh, David Wenham. That's right. He's your dude. Your Lord of the Rings man, right? Faramir.
The voice man.
Yeah, Faramir.
The voice of Sparta.
His dad. His brother's name was Ned Stark. All right. I'm now going to play this because that's Stark. Where we're at. Where is it? Okay, here it is. Right there. That's the Film Sack Checklist. Video game blood? Check. Fassbender's really good before he knew he was really good? Check. And finally, I see Paulo, but where's Nikki? Check. For those who don't know, if you're Lost
no
fans,
way, really?
If you're Lost fans, Xerxes is Paulo. So, which is weird because he's a little tiny Brazilian guy, but he is made to look huge here. But that's Paulo from Nikki and Paulo's season.
That is
Lost.
Crazy.
Yeah, I don't understand why was this effort gone to? To make everybody all anachronistic in terms of the actor playing the role. Like,
I don't know.
Why not get a big Persian? Why not get Shaquille O'Neal? He would have been.
Oh my gosh. Shaquille O'Neal in 300. That would have been
great.
Awesome.
Don't try to tell me any different. Here's the thing though. That guy actually tried to, what's the word when you go try out for a part? He auditioned.
Audition?
There you go. Mm-hmm. He auditioned for, like this, kidding. Like the software
what's
I'm
the
using
software
to record
you're using?
This. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Like right now. He was trying to be one of the other guys on the 300 team, and they liked him so much for Xerxes, they said, no, you're going to be Xerxes. And he said,
look at my abs. I can do it.
He said, okay, I'll be Xerxes. Let's see. We got some Star Trek connections. Daryl sent these in. Big thanks to him, the Trek nerd. Stephen McHattie was a loyalist. He's the older guy that was helping the queen out all the time. Getting her into the council and talking to her.
No, he makes me want to do my. He wants makes me want to do the beard thing. Get rid of my mustache.
Yeah, that thing is
burns,
cool.
Do the little big beard thing.
That thing is super cool. I think actually, a lot of those Greek beards were cool. Anyway, he's a loyalist in DS9. He played Romulan Senator Venrak in the episode "In the Pale Moonlight," famous for saying "It's a fake." Remember the "It's a fake" guy. Enterprise played the alien foreman in the episode The Zindi. And then finally, Peter Mensah, who played the messenger, who got... Wait, he's not the black messenger, is he? Oh, he must be. Anyway, he played Terra Prime member Daniel Greaves in the episodes Demons
and
Terra Prime.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the black guy.
He was going in the hole, baby.
He was real good, by the way, in that Spartacus show, which basically is a 300 ripoff, just shown weekly. but it's he's great in that. He was like the head of the gladiator school thing, and real good in that too. So anyway,
guess what, son? You're going to gladiator school.
That's right. Get up, boy. You're late for gladiator school. Soundtrack, you give it a BA for badass. I think it's great. No problems with it. Yeah. The little guitar part even works for me. I don't have a problem with that. It's good.
What about a dude with the double flutes? Who is that guy?
Why do you need two flutes leading people through the
right?
The
I got
canyon.
Double flutes.
In the future, it'll be...
Or is it clarinets? What was that exactly?
Those are flutes. Yep.
You know what? It occurs to me the reason I like 300 is the same reason I like Mad Max Fury Road. Because this is the same damn thing. It really is. It's better. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's better and more, you know, it's bigger and louder and awesomer. But it's based on the same thing. It's this madness. It's this this visceral core story thing, kind of deserty, like everything's going to shit. Like, I love that. And then and they had a bard. These guys had a bard. Oh, something I didn't know watching this. I think I finally figured out the origin of the term double standard. I thought double standard meant, if I said to Brian Ibbett, hey, Brian, you have a double standard on some topic, and that would mean that, oh, well, I have a standard of I think I shouldn't steal, but then I ripped off some software, but that's different. But I'm saying, no, you have a double standard. That's what I thought it meant.
Yeah,
I did some looking around. The origin of this is double standard is when you are carrying into war. The idea is you would carry into war, your standard bearer would carry a flag that on one side is the place you're supposed to be fighting for, but secretly on the other, it's all figurative, but on the other side is the opposing army's standard. And so you're playing both sides.
I sure hope the wind doesn't change because you'll be revealed.
But it's the same idea. Like, and they kept referring to it in this. You will carry my double standard. And normally a double standard is a two-flagged thing that's supposed to be all for you. But
interesting.
Yeah, I had no idea.
I didn't know that's where it came from.
Loved learning that. Learning is special.
Learned something.
Here you go.
I also have a word a day calendar.
Let's do a Twitter post. This is where you guys in 140 characters or less sum it up. Let's start with Randy.
300. Goodbye, my love. He doesn't say it. There's no room for softness, not in film sack. No place for weakness. Only the hard and strong may call themselves film sack. Only the hard.
And strong. Oh, you ran out of characters. That's why you couldn't do strong.
Yes, I ran out of characters, and I got to end on a joke about us all having an erection, Scott.
Oh, gosh, dang it. Great.
Film sack, the porn version.
Next up, Brian Ibbett. Dunaway.
300, like taking everything and giving nothing. Thank you for 300 episodes. Please watch your step.
Watch your step on this slave carried freaking...
There's a hole there. Watch, man. Why did you even walk with him to the hole? How could you not know what was going to happen walking to the hole?
So weird. World's biggest hole. Didn't even notice it. And finally, speaking of the world's biggest hole, Brian Ibbett.
Thanks for not making me go second. I was still writing mine. Who's that Spartan going to dine in hell? It's me. It's me. I say, who's that Spartan never going to surrender? It's me. It's me. This is madness.
I like where you went with that, and you just wrote that like in between.
You were writing yours,
while
you were doing saying yours.
That's what we do.
You haven't seen a Will Ferrell episode of Saturday Night Live recently?
Oh no,
I haven't seen Spartan. Spoof thing.
I'm
forever.
Asking you.
Well, he hasn't done one recently, has he?
Well, I mean, I've seen reruns recently.
Tweet had to come from somewhere, and so I'm just asking.
Yeah, it's the Will Ferrell thing, right?
Yeah. That is what I'm doing.
Is this a thing that's on your mind regularly?
Well, when you hear Spartans.
Okay, all right.
Spartans, yeah, because the team Spartans. No, I think it's a great, it's a fine reference.
No, it's really funny. I was just wondering the process behind Brian's joke.
I was going to write something about Doctor Strange, but I'm worried that, you know, he's such a supervillain that it would have been a hard one to write.
Oh, the again. Emails and feedback we got about that this week.
Gosh, I hope that this forthcoming film is good.
Yeah, I hope so too. They're going to make him a hero in this one, I heard. So it'll be interesting.
What? Oh, they're totally.
How weird! I know. Twitter post is done, except. Oh no, it is. So now it's time for whatever the hell this button does. Here we go. It's the alternate title. I have it right here. Blue Screen Hell or Leon and the 299 of his best friends.
Leon.
We had an email from a lovely listener who I want to read now. This is appropriate for today's episode, I believe, given that we are on 300. He says, Dear FilmSack, I can't believe you've been at this for 300 episodes. In fact, If you do the math, you started the show when 300 was only two or three-year-old movie. Now we are 10 years away, and that feels really weird from the movie, not him or whatever. I hope you never stop, and I'll do and do it till you're old. Well, older than you are now, smiley face with a winky eye. Here's to the greatest film show of all time, podcast or otherwise. Choo Choo Train is the best position, Kevin Sharp.
I've enjoyed that so much.
If this is the last thing we ever do, I want to end on that email because, man, Choo Choo Train is the best sex position.
Kevin Sharp. Thank you, Kevin. And everyone who's emailed us and called us and stuff for over these low, many 300 episodes of the show, you've all been extremely kind. And there are hundreds of you sending emails that are very great like this, but we don't have time to read them all. So, Kevin, you were the lucky winner there of getting yours chosen. All right. So here's the deal. For 301, we got some traveling people, and that means another commentary track. For what you say, the old episode of the Twilight Zone with Shatner with an alien on the wing.
Woo! What's Nightmare that? At 10,000 feet.
That's what it's called. What's it called?
Nightmare at 20,000 feet? Nightmare at 10,000 feet?
Must be 20,000.
Nightmare at 5 feet. You're going to crash.
Nightmare at 20,000 feet.
It's the one they remade for the movie, but with John Lithgow in it. And
that's right.
It's a classic, and it's Shatner, and it's an alien.
You want to see something scary?
Yeah. And when I was a kid, this weirded the hell out of me. It really freaked me out. So
I'm weirded out by it. I'm an adult for the most part.
So we're going to watch that together, do a live commentary. It's on Netflix. You can put it in your ears and listen with us and all that stuff. So that's next week. Our film after that is a normal episode. What is that one, Andy? I already forgot.
We're going to watch Blade 2.
Oh, yeah. Blade 2. Dude.
Blade 2.
I'm excited about Blade 2.
Blade of the Dose.
I think I liked Blade 2 better than 1.
Which one was Blade 2?
Blade 2 is the Del Toro movie. He directed it. And it's before anyone knew who he was.
Ryan Reynolds was not in that one.
No, 3. He was in 3. Yeah.
Right.
3 was Ryan Reynolds and like the three hunters that went around with Wesley Snipes. This is the one where they go to London or something like that, right?
This is the one that Wesley Snipes bitched about. This is the one he hated, right?
He had trouble making or was frustrated with or whatever, but it's the one that I think most fans consider it the best. It's more of a horror movie of the three.
Really?
Yeah, I like it. I remember liking it. We'll see. I don't know if it
is this
up.
The one with the dance clubs, or was that the first one?
That's the first one.
Okay. And I don't know if I've ever seen the second one then. This will be great.
Oh, it will be good. Yeah. And this is before Guillermo del Toro was like a name. Like this was still early. Like this would have been like around his Mimic era.
When he was right before.
Yeah,
right before
Mimic.
He got famous.
So anyway, come back for that. That'll be the week after next. And again, next week is Nightmare at 20,000 feet with William Shatner. That's going to do it. Filmsack.com is our website. Leave us voicemails, 801-471-0462. And as always, just like Kevin Sharp, you can leave us emails at filmsack@gmail.com, on Twitter at filmsack. Leave us reviews wherever you get this show. Thank you, everybody, for listening for 300 episodes, and we'll see you next time.
This is Sparta.
This is Sparta.
This is Sparta.
This is
Sparta.
A big one.
That was Sparta. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com. Do you think if you lived in Sparta, you would be considered part of Sparta?
Mm-hmm. You would. That's exactly right.
Dad
I
joke.
Live in Sparta.